I think there's a lot of strength in knowing that you do not know something. I've definitely practiced the skill of humility. I have seen it in action, and I'm learning about myself, the sorts of activities that I really enjoy as I consider the kind of careers that are on the outside.
Welcome to Long Blue Leadership, presented by the U.S. Air Force Academy Association and Foundation. Your host for this edition of Long Blue Leadership is Navir Walkowitz, USAFA class of 99, currently serving the Association of Graduates as Senior Vice President of Alumni Relations and as a member of the AOG Board of Directors. And now, Navir Walkowitz.
My guest today is Major Julian Cosmo Gluck, a USAFA class of 2012 graduate of distinction. Based in Boston, he is currently serving in the Air Force Reserve in the Defense Innovation Unit and pursuing his MBA at the Harvard Business School. There is so much in Major Gluck's background that we'll just touch the surface for now. He flew B-52s for more than 6 years. In 2023, he was named one of 10 outstanding young Americans, which puts him in the company of American presidents, statesmen, and generals, including the Air Force Academy Association and Foundation's General Mike Gould, class of 76, who received the honor in 1985. In 2020, Major Gluck was named to Forbes' 30 Under 30 list for law and policy. In 2018, he was named Air Force Times Airman of the Year. He is a published author, public speaker, and contributor to the International Discourse on Public Policy, sharing his lessons in leadership with students in elementary school, at university, senior leaders in defense, nonprofits, and national-level elected policymakers. We'll talk with Major Gluck about his work as a member of the Air Force Reserve and how that relates to his membership in the Order of Dedalians, a fraternal organization founded after World War I, comprised of aviators. He is a gregarious man of warmth, humility, and humor, always willing to share what he knows with those aspiring to become aviators, lead, or be better leaders, and always ready with an enthusiastic howdy. This should be a very enjoyable conversation. Joining us from Boston, Julian, welcome to Long Blue Leadership.
Well, I feel like I have to say howdy now, but I was going to say it anyway, so howdy. Good to be here.
Howdy. So glad you're here with us today. Thank you for making the time. We are really excited to learn more about your thoughts on leadership. But as we like to, we want to kind of take a step back, rewind the time a little bit, and learn about young Julian. Why don't we start there? Tell us about your childhood, life before the academy, et cetera.
Sure. So I grew up all around primarily the southeastern United States. My dad's a pilot and was going through different positions. My mom's an occupational therapist. They had met in Texas, but I was born in Florida. And then over the course of my childhood, I lived in Florida, Tennessee, Maryland, South Carolina, and Georgia, where I finished out elementary school, middle school, and then high school. And when I was a kid, I was involved in a myriad of different activities. I really enjoyed acting and had gotten the chance to co-star in a public broadcasting television show with GPB, one of the stations back in Georgia. Did a little bit of entrepreneurship, starting a company when I was 14. I became involved in the Civil Air Patrol and high school wrestling, extemporaneous speech competitions. And with all the different activities going on, I wanted to continue on the tradition in my family of military service, applied to the Air Force Academy. Thankfully, the zoo let me in, and it's been a great time since.
Who were some of the influencers in your life that kind of led you down that path? I know you mentioned, you know, your family has had many that have served. Maybe are those who influenced you? Are there others maybe that you read or influenced you as well?
The members of my family are the largest influence on my decision to join the military. I'm fifth generation. As you go through different lines in the family, people on both sides had served primarily in the United States, and hearing their stories of both sacrifice, of putting the organization over oneself, the service to country, really resonated with me as a kid. And so I knew even when I was very young that I wanted to serve in the military. As well, a lot of the reading that I did as a child, I would say, and then going through my time at the academy was also very much a philosophical or martial focus throughout, a lot of philosophy mixed in as well with the standard books that one would read as a kid.
Five generations. Would you say that it was destiny then to go into the military via the Air Force Academy or just military in general? Or was it really intentional on your part?
I think there was definitely some element of the Academy being the destination. Now, as far as Air Force Academy versus a few of the other, I would say, lesser options with our rivals on the East Coast there, I wasn't initially sure which one I was going to apply to. And ultimately, the Air Force Academy made the most sense to me, primarily because of the Academy's like awesome record of placing people into really impactful strategic roles later on. I like the emphasis on technology. And I think as well, having a Japanese program, which only the Air Force Academy and maybe the Naval Academy had. And I wanted to take Japanese classes. So that was something that was on my mind.
Did you take Japanese classes?
Mochiron. Beikoku kugun shikan gakko de nihongo benkyou shimashita. So I did indeed study Japanese. It was my minor at the academy. And sometimes really useful either in like bilateral track two diplomatic scenarios or ordering sushi at really nice restaurants.
I don't think I would be as successful. All I remember is toile wa doku desu ka, which is where is
that,
the bathroom.
That is
so I guess that, you know, that's
critically
important.
Let's
talk about it at the academy. Maybe what were some of the roles in leadership you had, or let's just talk about your academy experience in general. Kind of set the stage for us.
So the first leadership role I ever had at the academy was the Mitchell Hall Food Focus Committee. So dually year, freshman year, I'm sitting in the SAR, the Squadron Assembly Room. I'm not sure if the audience is all super familiar with the acronyms or if they've changed over time, but I'm in the SAR and they're like, hey, we have a volunteer opportunity. And I'm just thinking in my mind, I've been at the academy for a few weeks. This is my chance to be an impactful leader early on. And they just needed someone to test out the food at Mitchell Hall. I raised my hand really proudly. And over the course of the year, I gave my own attempt at food criticism to the excellent staff at Mitchell Hall, trying to shape the sort of meals cadets would have. Now, I'm not sure if I've had any job since then that is quite as impactful. I'm still trying to chase that incredible opportunity to rate how hard the cookies were or that the chicken filet sandwiches were pretty solid. But after that one, I would go into primarily roles that were focused on sort of command-oriented leadership. I was the first sergeant, I believe, squadron superintendent for basic cadet training. I served on group staff a couple times with, I would say, the culminating job as the group commander for cadet group one, first group first. So I had a great time doing that. My summers were spent flying gliders, doing the SEER program when we still had CST, and as well as getting the chance to do an internship at the Senate. So I was the one cadet that was sent there as sort of an interim military legislative assistant, and did basic another time as well as the director of military guidance officers. Another role that I did sophomore through first year was the personal ethics and education representative program, the peer program. I had a really good time, and I thought that it was really valuable getting to speak with cadets who were having troubles in their personal life, professional life, and really be able to bring them to those who could help for more challenging issues, such as ones that may involve the law or medical needs. And then for ones that I felt like I could have a good handle on, being able to practice my interpersonal communication, and super useful later on in my career.
You held many leadership positions, and I'm sure there were many accolades that came with that. What were some of the challenges that you experienced in those positions? And how did you balance being a leader all the time with your own needs in developing yourself?
I would say the juxtaposition between the military lifestyle, which often is more regimented, and a desire to both give back and be creative, sort of these secondary and tertiary desires that I really wanted to have in my personal life and professional life to continue to self-actualize and feel comfortable, were always at sort of a crossroads. But the academy thankfully made that possible. Now, I did that at the expense of probably getting 8 hours of sleep per night, maybe about half of that most of the time, and a lot of all-nighters. But I think there were some people who were just hardcore DGs and still got 8 hours of sleep. I'm not one of those. I did not get a lot of it. But when I was there doing the cadet leadership jobs, I needed an outlet. So for Dooley year, I acted with Blue Bards. I tried to relive a little bit of that child acting background. And that was a lot of fun. We did Grease and 12 Angry Men. Then through both 4-degree year all the way up through first year and a little bit as a casual lieutenant, I sung with the In the Stairwell a cappella group. I was a beatboxer and sung bass as well. And that was a phenomenal time getting to perform for the senior leaders that came in at the White House a couple times. And then later on getting to relive that as well as an alumnus at the America's Got Talent semifinals, doing an exhibition before the then current crop of cadets just totally crushed it out there on the stage. So I think throughout that time at the academy, just being able to go, hey, I need to really focus on academics. I need to grow in my leadership capabilities, but I also want creative things and then community service oriented things. And that was where I became involved with programs like the Knights of Columbus when I was a cadet, finding ways to give back in the local community and lead volunteer projects across the state of Colorado and then eventually nationally, internationally.
I really appreciate you sharing that because I think sometimes there might be a misconception or a perception even that, you know, you can be a leader and you have to be really strict and focused and you can't really focus on other things that you're really passionate about or, you know, that bring joy as well, right? So maybe you can't have both, but I really appreciate that you shared that you can. So do you prefer beatboxing or bass? What did that sound like?
Well, these days, so I recently joined the Harvard Business School a cappella group, which is called Heard on the Street, and I'm still beatboxing, but I'm getting a little bit more into the singing part, primarily because over the past 10 years, it's mostly been playing along with my guitar and singing karaoke. So I definitely enjoy beatboxing, but I'm enjoying doing more singing these days as well.
You're holding back on us
right
now?
You can go to YouTube and see some old clips. I think I'll refrain from beatboxing on here. I haven't checked this mic to see if like a... So maybe that worked.
That was
on
amazing.
Yeah.
No, I think that the mic came through fantastically. And no, that is wonderful. We really appreciate that. And again, it also plays into, you know, we really can be fully immersed in a lot of things, right? We don't have to just be down one lane when it comes to leadership and you know, pursuing our dreams. So let's talk a little bit about while you were in the military. You shared that you flew B-52s for over 6 years. What was that experience like? And then I'm going to ask you a follow-on about flying, because there's something as a non-flyer, non-rated grad, I just have a question on. So first tell us about what it was like flying B-52s.
So flying the B-52, aka the Buff, was a blast. It's a very challenging aircraft, I think, compared to many others in the inventory. It is an older platform. It's older than my father, based on earlier versions that are older than both my parents and probably many of the current cadets' grandparents. My grandfather, in fact, asked me when I told him I dropped the B-52, they're still flying those? And I was like, indeed, Grandpa, and you enlisted in the Air Force after they'd already been in service. But I can tell you, although they are up there in years, it's a very lethal platform. It's an effective platform. It's constantly being brought to the forefront of innovation through the incredible work that the test community does, that the primes and other companies are able to leverage with different technologies as far as munitions, its radar capabilities. A lot of exciting changes with new engines that will be coming about for the next generation of bomber pilots. So I enjoyed flying it. It definitely had its moments where it tested my limits, and I'm super grateful for the instructors and weapons school graduates who helped develop me from a young, very uncertain co-pilot to being a more adept and I would say empowered aviator as I continued to like become more comfortable and eventually have the chance before I departed the community for other opportunities to instruct as well.
What were some of the challenges that you faced in that? Was it more just a level of comfort or was it other things?
I think in the B-52, there's a wide range of different mission sets that you need to be familiarized with. I mean, not only the nuclear deterrence mission that is the Secretary of Defense's number one priority and extremely critical for our ability to deter and assure. You also have the close air support mission, sea mining, JASSM, MALD, just a massive suite of different weapons. You need to be able to control an aircraft that has sometimes sluggish controls, and as you're powering through different regimes in the airplane, you also need to be not only taking care of your own aircraft, but if you're flying in formation as a formation leader, mission lead, or even a mission commander, you need to be able to have an awareness of all the other aircraft and players that are out there in the kill box or wherever you're operating. So I think as you're moving up from co-pilot to aircraft commander and mission lead and eventually to instructor, the stakes become higher. The challenges as far as your knowledge set, your situational awareness and task management increase. And thankfully, with great instructors and those in more senior positions who believed in the opportunity to continue to progress, I had the just joy of a lifetime getting to fly the B-52, particularly with my crew in 2016 to 17 as a young co-pilot out in Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan in Operations Inherent Resolve and Freedom Sentinel. So by far the most impactful, meaningful 6 months of my life, and that would not have been possible without the B-52 community.
That's really powerful. Thank you. One of the questions that's on my mind, and I think for others that maybe aren't in the rated community, so pilot versus aviator, can you, you know, demystify this?
Sure, I'll do my best. And I think it also depends on which branch. The terminology differs a little bit, I believe, in the Navy particularly. But for the Air Force, I would normally think of an aviator as a rated individual who would either be a pilot, a weapons systems officer, or navigator, a flight surgeon, others who have a set of wings on the officer side and that take part in some aspect of the airplane. Pilots in particular are the ones normally controlling the aircraft as far as the movement of it, which you would normally think of as aviating, whereas like a weapon system officer is doing the navigating.
That is helpful. One of the things we do is, you know, we have a group of people, of listeners that may not know some of our terms. So can you explain the difference between rated and non-rated?
I will do my best with that as well. So a rated officer is a person who has gone through a formal technical training program that relates to the flying of a particular mission system, whether that is an aircraft or a UAS, a remotely piloted aircraft, so unmanned aerial system for UAS. So these individuals have on their service dress or mess dress or on their flight suit a set of wings that indicate that there's this particular skill set that was developed over time. And the rated aviators have particular requirements as far as medical. In addition to their technical training, you have to make sure you're able to still fly. And they also have certain other personnel system requirements. So when I think rated, I think of a person who is in the cockpit or on the airplane with a very specific job. Like an air battle manager is a radiated aviator who on different command and control platforms has a particular mission set with controlling battle space. That's also considered rated.
We want to make sure that everyone feels able to be able to connect with what you're sharing. So that was a fantastic explanation.
And if there's anything wrong, just go to the comments. Just continue to like increase the social media exposure by saying, Cosmo, you're wrong. And I'll take it.
No, that's perfect. Thank you. Well, before we kind of leave this topic of aviation, I'd really like to learn a little bit more about the Order of Dedalians. Can you talk about this organization a bit? How did it come to be part of your life? I think that's just one that we're not all familiar with.
The Order of Dedalians is a professional order of military aviators that was founded by World War I pilots in around 1934. And these particular pilots wanted to start an organization that would commemorate the service that occurred, all the valor that took place in the skies for the Great War. And then afterward, to be able to continue to interact with each other and have a network of convivial interaction between them. Then over time, the Order of Dedalians, and through its charitable arm, the Dedalian Foundation, has grown into this organization for all military aviators, around 10,000, I believe, in our current membership. And our organization not only helps connect aviators from the past and present, but also to continue to commemorate that service of the founders of the organization. We do scholarships to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars to help students in ROTC programs who wish to become military aviators. And we also have, in addition to those academic scholarships, flight scholarships that teach people how to fly. We have a program that supports junior ROTC, an awards program for different rated aviation training programs to celebrate the success and excellence of the students who are in there. So as the youngest member of the Board of Trustees, I'm grateful to get to learn from incredible senior leaders and general officers who have flown a variety of different aircraft. And I think it is a wonderful program for those who are still on active duty or in the reserve, as well as those who have separated or who are retired, who would like to continue to swap stories, hear a lot of fantastic speakers who come in and continue to contribute to the next generation of flyer while still paying homage or respect to those who came before us.
What's something that's been really personal to you that you've been proud to see the Order of Dedalians take part in? Can you share maybe a more specific story?
So coming into the organization, I noticed that we had, and I would say this resonates with a lot of sort of golden age fraternal organizations like the Knights of Columbus and many others, a wealth of experience with our older members who are very dedicated. Perhaps they're fully retired from their jobs. They have a lot of time to give back, but not as many younger members who are coming in, particularly those who are still actively wearing the uniform and flying. So thankfully, with the support of the full-time professionals at the Order of Dedalians and our trustees and directors at the foundation and the order itself, we got together to discuss a lot of ways to innovate the organization, to bring it into its next phase, particularly to help drive recruitment and retention with a lot of these potential younger members by having the opportunity to go to bases and really advocate that the Order of Dedalians is not only a force for good in that it's helping train new aviators, which is a critical need for the national security enterprise, but it's also a fantastic retention tool by providing a strong network of mentorship. So my hope is that a lot of the meetings that we had take place that focused on bringing everyone together will eventually culminate in a desire for perhaps any listeners to this particular podcast who go, you know what? This is a historic program. I would like to volunteer or be a part of it and get to listen to some amazing stories and then do my part to give back as well.
Thank you for sharing that. And that really speaks very clearly to me. That's one of the things here at the association that we're working to do as well, you know, really ignite our younger graduates into membership and participation and engagement. Well, let's shift gears a little bit from the world of aviation. You know, you talked about it as a cadet. You had kind of two facets that you're really interested in, the creative side and also the leadership side. Of course, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Maybe you can talk about what it's like now to transition. You're at the Harvard Business School. You're an author. Let's talk about this lane a little bit.
Yeah, so I am super grateful to be a reservist. I had a really engaging time on active duty. It was fantastic for leadership development with some fantastic leaders over the years. But the wonderful thing about the Air Force, there are so many different ways to continue serving in uniform. One of my big interests that was my desire to go back to school and find other opportunities to support organizations, including the United States government, through ways that I thought were more focused on strategic development. Going to the reserve, transitioning through the Palace Chase program, and going back to school has made all of that possible. So as a reservist now, I'm assigned to the Defense Innovation Unit in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, where we help with dual-use technologies, helping bring a lot of the technologists and founders, leaders of different programs who have ideas that can support a range of portfolios for the Department of Defense at large, such as autonomy, AI, energy, human systems, bringing those together to help improve our DoD systems, particularly for a lot of these smaller companies that could use a lot of support. So that has been fantastic. I'm still very much in an embryonic stage within my reserve service. There's a lot for me to learn. And as I'm going through this transition, it's been amazing getting to talk to reservists who've been there and done that. They've done the transition and they're continuing to give back. It's not about the money for them. It's about a way to continue to give back to our United States military. And that's something that's really inspiring to me and inspired me a lot when I was out in Korea as an aide, when all the reservists who would come in to be part of the JACE and take time away from their families and from their busy jobs to suit up, you know, pull on their flight suits, come out to Korea and really make a difference for our bilateral, multilateral organizations out there. So that's been fantastic. At Harvard, it's been a wonderful learning opportunity. I loved my time at the Academy. I wouldn't trade it for anything, and it was the perfect undergrad experience for me. Now going through as a grad school student, I'm kind of getting to see that other side. I've got the more college dorm style apartment, even though I'm not living on campus. You know, it's not quite hacky sack in the quad that I was imagining that at college would be, but the range of different people who are members of the HBS class of 2025 is so interesting. People from all around the world, very different backgrounds. I mean, of course, we have venture capitalists, consultants, bankers here, but there's also a very, I would say, engaged and interesting veteran group. And I really love hanging out with the other veterans who are in both my section and the class at large. In fact, one of the traditions that we started my section is the veterans would all wear Hawaiian shirts on Fridays. And so I had to buy a lot more Hawaiian shirts because I was never stationed in Hawaii, did not have hardly any of them. And that's where I found this Air Force Academy Hawaiian shirt. So
that is outstanding.
I don't think anyone else who's coming on your podcast is probably going to have one of these. So so it's been really great at HBS. I'm learning a lot. I have 2.5 more semesters left, and I'm excited for what comes next as well.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit. So you went to the Academy. You had incredible opportunities to lead. You've done some of this in the reserve. And then also at Harvard, what does leadership look like across those different lanes? How have you seen leadership evolve, and how has it shaped you during this time?
The opportunities I had to lead both at the Academy and on active duty certainly inform and help bring different context and experience to the leadership opportunities I may have at school now or that I hope to have in the future. I will say there's a lot to learn to bring that into full realization as I continue through this transition from military to the civilian world. So as I look at like my experience as a flight commander for aircrew flight equipment technicians in SEER when I was at Barksdale, or getting to serve as a director of staff at Air Combat Command in the A3A, a lot of those involved being able to help our junior enlisted, to be able to work with phenomenal senior non-commissioned officers, how to help pass information up and down the chain, to innovate, to go through a lot of the administrative challenges that are elements of bureaucracy and probably omnipresent no matter what sort of organization you're in. So those have been great. Now at school, I would say a lot of the leadership could be leadership in the classroom. For me, as someone not coming from Goldman Sachs or Bain, I have a lot of learning and followership I'm enjoying in the classroom right now as I'm getting to really just take in a lot from all of the incredible experiences of my younger section mates and classmates who have had a very relevant experience. And then the aspects of the veteran experience that also relate myself and many others in the veteran community who are students at my business school, and I'm sure at many of the other ones across the country and world are able to relate, is also super useful. So I'm excited as I go into professional work, both this summer and after graduation, to be able to bring the I guess, gregariousness, as was described at the beginning, to my next job and a lot of those fantastic opportunities to learn and serve in the military as I continue to grow and hopefully become a more effective cross-sector leader.
So you talked about, you know, you have a lot to learn. What has been something you've learned about yourself so far in this journey? So thinking about leadership and what our listeners are hoping to glean, you know, what's something you've learned about yourself in the, whether as a follower, to your point, you know, how important is it to be a follower in the world of leadership, et cetera?
I think there's a lot of strength in knowing that you do not know something. And through my time in business school, there is a lot that I think many of those who are coming from civilian careers that more directly relate to business would think is just a information that everyone is armed with that is absent for many of us who were not as directly involved in running for-profit organizations or who weren't involved in sales, investment banking, or any of these other careers. So during my time at HBS, I've definitely practiced the skill of humility. I have seen it in action with some of the challenging tests that I have taken so far over the past semester and a half. And I'm learning about myself, the sorts of activities that I really enjoy as I consider the kind of careers that are on the outside. Flying airplanes and then going into, let's say, consulting is a big leap, but there are also a lot of elements of that sort of leadership that I would say at least are correlate with each other. And as I continue to figure out what am I skilled at, what do I enjoy, and sometimes those aren't always aligned, I can reach out to mentors, to classmates, to grads. In particular, I've reached out to a lot of grads who are out there in the civilian world to find out, what do you recommend? How do I improve? How do I grow in this? And I'm excited for the kind of development that I hope to see and that I will strive to really develop over the next year and a half and then many years ahead.
And has there been a tidbit of leadership from some of those mentors you've reached out to in the graduate community or across different lanes that has impacted you? And if so, what would you share with the group that is?
I would say a lot of the grads who I've spoke with that are maybe from like the 90s and 2000s who've gone to business school or law school or medical school have shared how much of an impact the military had on them and where there are sometimes vacuums for that sort of selfless leadership and that aspect of giving back that are in uniform, that you really need something like that to continue to really feel like you're giving it your all and that you're in the right place that you could be. Like you could be making millions and millions of dollars is a story that was relayed to me by a former Air Force pilot. But if you are not finding a way to really do something for others, it may come across meaningless in many ways. Like you can be happy on a yacht, I'm sure. And if anyone out there's got one, I'm happy to hop on sometime over spring break. But programs like the Civil Air Patrol through the Air Force Auxiliary that give away for grads who are perhaps still in uniform or out of uniform to continue to give back, to do things such as domestic search and rescue or helping mentor and teach middle school, high school, and college students. Those are ways that like really connect you with service that aren't full-time jobs that have less responsibility, I would say, than continuing to serve in the reserve and still allow a lot of different freedoms that maybe you want to experience that provide another shade of meaning that perhaps you're not getting in one's full career.
And I think that's really meaningful for people to hear, right? I think when you're looking at success, how do you define success? Certainly there's an element of being able to have the freedoms to do things that money brings, but there's also the fulfillment internally that comes from being part of or doing something bigger. So how much longer in your program?
So I've got 2.5 semesters left. I'll graduate, God willing, or I think I remember from my 4-degree days in base cadet training, if you make it that far, I think I heard that a lot, May 2025.
All right. So May 2025, what's next, Julian?
I'm not sure quite yet after graduation. This summer, I have a really phenomenal opportunity lined up to be a consultant with McKinsey and Company in their London office. So this is the pre-LinkedIn update. I'll be at McKinsey this summer. I applied to a few other fellowships, and I'm interested in finding ways to continue to learn about these different sectors, how one can grow a company as well as an organization that is a not-for-profit, like most of my experience, or within government service. After graduation, I hope to have continued opportunities over the decades to come to give back. Certainly interested in public service as well as being able to develop different organizations. So we'll see. But I'm definitely excited for this summer. And I think there's a lot that I have to learn with McKinsey just across the pond.
You're certainly no stranger to kind of putting everything into something and kind of seeing the benefits that come from that. All of the awards I went through. Beyond learning and seeing what's out there, what you just described, is there something else that you're like, at some point down the road, this is something I'm striving for?
I think overall down the road, as long as I'm making a positive impact in my circle and in my community, that's the most important thing to me. Like, I don't want to give up the uniform. I've loved serving in the Air Force, and I'll stay in the Air Force Reserve, hopefully, as long as they'll keep me. And it would be great to have more opportunities to lead again. Being a flight commander was immensely rewarding. I really loved working with the airmen. And if I had other opportunities to lead more directly in the future, I'd love to do so. And hopefully continue to give back, serve other organizations, and continue to volunteer at the local level and on up.
And you've had many different experiences in leadership. What are the one or two things you want to leave with the audience to take away from this from you?
I would say, and I'll plug sort of my company grade officers council message. I had a great time in CGOC as a lieutenant and a captain, and now serving as a chairman emeritus for the Department of the Air Force, CGOC. I would say that for those who are still on active duty, wherever you're stationed, there is a fantastic place where you can serve your community and do your part. And for our grads and retirees, no matter where you're at, there is a charity that would love to have you on their team. So providing your time, your talent, your treasure to a variety of organizations. If you want to work with kids, there are fantastic charities out there that will help you mentor the next generation. If you want to support the elderly and those who've come before us, there are plenty of organizations as well. So I would leave you with, if you have some time available, if there's money that you're seeking to donate, there is a cause that will resonate with you. Just go to the search engine of your choice. Maybe it's Ask Jeeves, and just put, you know,
that's
a
couple still
of those.
Around.
You know what? I might have to check after this podcast. I was just making sure. If I said a different one, it would sound like maybe a sponsorship message. But yeah, go to Lycos. I think that was a search engine in your Netscape Navigator. Go look up on AOL your, you know, these interests, and you'll be able to find a charity that works for you. And for the other tidbit of leadership, if there is something that you are not good at, there are people who will help you, who care about you, that will continue to take time to help you improve in that. And I'm finding that every day at HBS, as I make my way through finance classes and accounting, that there are classmates who know far more than me, who are far smarter than me, and that can really help out. And I think that's the same in uniform. I got lots of help when I was a pilot in the B-52, and would never have made it through pilot training or the bomber schoolhouse in the FTU or many other programs without incredible support from peers and instructors. So that's what I'll leave.
Those are gifts of information that just keep giving in so many ways. So thanks for sharing that. Well, we're at a point where I want to make sure that you had a chance to share everything that you would like to with our listeners. Was there anything I didn't ask you or something that you really want to share when it comes to leadership?
I would say I'm going to do a plug for the AOG. If there are things that you want your AOG to do, you are the person who can help facilitate that as well, just like I aim to, like many others. An alumni organization, a nonprofit, a charity is only as strong as its membership core. So as you continue to think about how you want the Air Force Academy to be a part of your life after graduation, if you're the kind of person that says, hey, I drove away from Arnold Hall or out Northgate or Southgate with the chapel in my rearview mirror, and it's kind of the furthest thing from my memory at this point, then I urge you to consider the impact that the school had, whether it was those icy days marching outside or perhaps some of the more fond memories that you'll have of the zoo. Not everything in everyone's cadet experience was perhaps what you hoped it would be, but all of us were shaped by that experience there. I loved the Academy. I got a lot out of it, and I hope to continue to give back to it, whether it's through the AUG or just being able to talk with the current crop of cadets, alumni, and give back. We're either cadets or alumni of an incredible institution, and let's show those of the other service academies that the Air Force Academy is truly the premier military academy in the United States.
I can get behind that. That's outstanding. Thank you so much. So, Julian, for our listeners, if anyone wants to get a hold of you, how would you suggest they do that?
You'll probably find me surrounded by case studies at HBS, so just wake me up so I'll do some more studying. Other ways, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm one of the only Julian Glucks. You can also find me on Instagram. It's Julian R. Gluck. If you put it without the R, it'll be one of those other Julian Glucks who's probably tired of people reaching out to him. So I'm happy to talk with current cadets, grads, and continue to build those bonds that we have as Zoomies.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Long Blue Leadership, Julian. It's been fantastic.
Hey. Always happy to chat with you and anyone else from the glorious old zoo. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Long Blue Leadership. If you enjoyed this episode, we encourage you to subscribe, share it with your family and friends, and post it to your social channels. Long Blue Leadership is a production of the Long Blue Line Podcast Network and presented by the U.S. Air Force Academy Association and Foundation. The views and opinions of the guests and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Air Force, Air Force Academy, Academy Association and Foundation, its staff, or management. The podcast drops every 2 weeks on Tuesday mornings. Subscribe to Long Blue Leadership on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn plus Alexa, and all your favorite podcast platforms. Search at Air Force Grads on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and more for show announcements and updates. And visit longblueleadership.org for past episodes and more Long Blue Line Podcast Network programming.